From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armilla, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk final exams. As we head into summer, we're taking a look back to see if we can remember what we've learned over the past year. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me, of course, as they do each week, New York Times bestselling authors Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Ross Petras, there in your home in Toronto. Ross, here in the U.S., we are coming up on the Independence Day holiday. Does Canada have, I guess, any sort of equivalent, or do you have any holiday around the same time that was just made up so that you guys could have days off too?
Well, that's an interesting way to put it, Fletcher. Actually, we do have a day. It's called Dominion. It used to be called Dominion Day. Now it's called Canada Day. And it celebrates the anniversary of the Confederation, which took place July 1st, 1867.
Oh,
and
wow.
So ours is coming up on July 1st, 2024.
That's pretty fun. So it's just kind of a nice coincidence that it's right around the same time.
And it's a complete coincidence, but it's a fun day. I was going to say, but it's celebrated much the same way. Fireworks, you know, barbecues, etc.
Kathy, you are at your home in Armilla. Do you have a fireworks barbecue day there in Armilla?
I got to say, here in Spain, it's like every other week there's a holiday. I mean, a ton of them are the Saint ones. Then you've got the others. And it's confusing because you never know when the grocery store is going to be open at this point. I have to always, like, seriously, it's a pain sometimes. And everybody else is like, yay. And I'm thinking, we need eggs. I don't know.
Well, we're into summer now, and so certainly school is out in just about every place except those poor kids that have to go to year-round school. And so Kathy and Ross thought it would be fun to, I guess, quiz me on sort of an end of the school year grammar pop quiz.
Well, that's about it, Fletcher. We're going to give you a grab bag of grammatical, spelling, word origin, everything. And we're going to see how well you do and how well you listened as we were discussing these earlier.
So a lot of these maybe are ideas that have come up over the past year or so in our show.
Right.
Yes.
Kath, you want to start with our first one?
Okay, here we go.
This is vital.
Very vital. This is a very important question. Last week, we asked you to define words from the spelling bee.
Oh, God.
So this week, we're going to open with making you spell. How do you spell this word? Gooey duck.
Oh, no. Gooey duck. Right. So gooey duck is sort of like some kind of clam or something that
yes.
has a very unattractive protuberance.
Yes, called a siphon. Yes.
but the one thing I remember about gooey duck is that it's kind of spelled backwards. And so it's almost like it's, I think, spelled maybe geoduck, G-E-O,
yes!
duck, D-U-C-K.
You got it, Fletcher, it is.
I always read it as geoduck because I remember
it came up
when I was a kid in books. I guess they were in the Pacific Northwest. They were like digging for geoducks. And I thought, what a strange name. Not the gooey duck is much better.
Can you remind me why it's spelled that way if it's pronounced gooey duck?
Well, apparently it was the Salish peoples called it gooey duck, and it was spelled G-O-E-D-U-C-K. But G-O-E looks sort of trying to sound out how it sounded like in Salish language.
Salish. I'm sorry, Ross.
Salish. Yes, Salish language. But the G-O-E looks weird, so they switched it. In English, G-O-E looks weird. They just switched it around
So they switched it so that we would have no idea how it's pronounced.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly.
Because, I mean, who yeah. I also love the fact, as Ross referred to, as the siphon, because the name, the word itself, the Salish part, the duck-ish part, apparently meant genitals. And it has this huge 3-foot-long siphon. It can.
Yeah.
But I want to say, though, that some linguists say that it just meant dig deep. There's the clean version and the more evocative version of the word.
So Fletcher, you got 1 point there, which is very good.
Off to a good start.
I'm gonna keep track.
Much better than last week when I was trying to define all of those spelling bee words.
That was unfair of us.
Okay, now we have a grammatical question. I'm gonna give you 4 sentences and read them to us and then tell us which one is correct.
Okay. Here's the first. Was it you who was here yesterday? Next. Okay. Were it you who was here yesterday?
Okay.
Third, was it you who were here yesterday? Oh, God, this is actually hard. The fourth one, were it you who were here yesterday?
Okay, and Fletcher, we're going to give you extra credit here. When you pick it, you have to explain to us why it was correct.
As strange as it seems, I think I actually would go with, was it you who was here yesterday? That's wrong. Okay.
Well, you could go with that, and many would. Actually, in fairness, I think that would be probably the one that many people would pick.
We're going to be persnickety. This is persnickety. Exactly.
The thing is, they all seem a little wrong. None of them really, like, gives me that, yeah, that one feeling. And that's often, I gotta be honest, and I say this a lot, but I should say it again. That's often how I am working when I'm writing or doing grammar questions. Mm-hmm. I do not know a lot of the structure of these things, and so I'm often going off my gut feeling. And usually it's right, and so I'm fortunate in that way, but I'm not always right.
I think that's a good way to go, though. I think we hear language, and we... by hearing it so many times, we get basically a feel, and usually that feel is correct.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the best way to go. And language is changing, and a lot of these rules are very persnickety.
Well, that's what
we
I
have
was
a couple more
say.
Coming up, but it doesn't really matter in terms of how you speak or how you write anymore. So I think that's a fine way to go. But anyway, the answer is number 3.
Yeah, that would be.
Was it you who were here yesterday?
That would have been my second choice. Yeah.
Okay, could you now tell us why you think it is correct that way?
Does it have something to do with the subjunctive? I don't know.
No.
When in doubt, throw in the subjunctive. It's often right.
Subjunctive, that's the reason. And then, like, go on. Yeah. Move along quickly. Yeah.
You were here yesterday, right? So the were is agreeing with the you.
Right. And it was.
It was, right. Was it you? It was. You were here yesterday. The who.
That's actually the flipping it. You get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That said, you said, was it you who was here yesterday? And I think I guarantee that probably is what the majority of people would say.
And I don't think it's a big deal.
Yeah.
In this case, the clarity is there. We obviously know. We're going to have a couple coming up that are going to be interesting in that area.
I want to say it's probably not a big deal if you say it in conversation. Mm-hmm. I think if you're writing, you probably should get that right. And I think I would I would be a little embarrassed if I wrote the one that I thought it was.
I think that's true.
I suspect, though, if you were writing, you probably would have gotten it right.
Yeah.
As opposed to talking. I really do.
If you was writing.
I were wrong.
No, I agree. I think some of these are best used in writing, and don't worry about it when you speak. This one I don't think really matters anymore that much at all, but we're going to do it. Okay, which is correct? Laptops that are used for gaming purposes are usually more expensive. Laptops which are used for gaming purposes are usually more expensive.
Right. I am still a little bit of a stickler for this, even though, like you said, Ross, it doesn't probably really matter. In this case, it should be that laptops that are used for gaming purposes, because we're talking about specifically the laptops that are used for gaming purposes. We're not just talking about laptops and, you know, those happen to be used for gaming purposes.
Exactly. This is one that I have to always stop, though. It's funny. Mm-hmm. You automatically have I don't know what it is I have an issue with. But yes, I mean, you need that when it's a restrictive clause, you need the clause to make the point. When it's a non-restrictive clause, you can get rid of that part and the sentence still makes sense. In this case, as you said, the point is that the laptops that are used for gaming purposes is the key.
It's restrictive. It's a specific type of laptop.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, if you get rid of it, laptops are usually more expensive. It doesn't make sense.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting, though, because Kathy is right. I have the same problem, and we're constantly corrected when we get galleys back. Hmm. We have copy editors correct us with that and which, and we both always forget which is
and we're
that
writing
and that
about language.
I know.
It's really embarrassing.
I do have to agree, though, that it. I mean, I think on a basic level, it does matter and a fair bit, but things have changed so much and people use them so interchangeably. It can't matter anymore. I mean, we're getting to where it can't matter anymore because so many people are using them so interchangeably. I don't really like it because, I mean, the meanings aren't exactly the same.
No, they're very different. One clue with a non-restrictive clause, even if it's used incorrectly, is that usually it's set off by commas.
Right.
Laptops, which are used for gaming purposes. In other words, you kind of pause and you... So I guess you can maybe figure it out a little bit, but...
I hate to say this, though, but nowadays people don't know how to punctuate, so no, I don't know if it helps as much as it used to, you know?
But, you know, you wouldn't see that comma there, though, if you were using that. You wouldn't... I mean, how often do you ever see anybody write laptops, comma, that are used for gaming purposes, comma?
You wouldn't, because it's a restrictive clause.
That's a good point.
Right,
yeah,
right. You don't see it.
Non-restrictive clauses can take commas. Restrictive clauses shouldn't, really, yeah. Usually.
Okay, this is a blast from the past. We have done this, and we expect you to remember. What did the word cute originally mean? Pretty, quick-witted, or short-tempered?
Yeah, it's interesting that you have this on here. I do a little bit remember us talking about it, but I'm not sure that I would have gotten the right answer. But strangely, just maybe yesterday, I was online, and some people were talking about this exact thing. About the word cute and how it came from acute, A-C-U-T-E, and it was related to being clever. Like, you can be too cute, right? You can be too clever. And so quick-witted, I think, is the answer.
Precisely.
Very good.
Yeah, because originally it was written with an apostrophe in place of the A. So acute.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It was a shortened version of acute. So you'd have apostrophe cute. And then it was like someone trying to be clever.
The one thing I wonder about, though, is how did it transform? I mean, I keep reading it transformed mm-hmm. into pretty and charming and all that. But I wonder how it did. I mean, how did that happen? You never know. It could be just random things. But
it was in the 1800s, right? I'm just wondering if it went from sharp. Because, you know, you say, ooh, you look sharp.
Could be.
Could it be something like that? You know, ooh, you look, that's a sharp outfit or something. I never say that. But, I mean, others do. Especially in gangster movies.
Okay, now we're going to go away from gangster movies and back to playing. And we're going to two sentences right here.
Okay, here they are. The first sentence, Fletcher plays as well as they. The second sentence, Fletcher plays as well as them. Well, if I were just speaking or probably writing, I would say them. I guess it's probably they because Fletcher plays as well as they do. We're just leaving the do off of the end of that sentence. But I don't like mm-hmm. it. I don't like it. I think them is fine.
That basically sums up everything we're about to say about that. Yes. I completely agree. But do you know what the as is?
The as is?
The as is called a correlative subordinating conjunction.
Oh, yeah.
So therefore it doesn't, it's not a preposition.
Fletcher almost said that a second ago.
He said it really, say it really quickly too. Correlative subordinating conjunction. Say it five times really fast and you have something else going on. Yeah, it is. Basically it doesn't, it's not a preposition. So it's not an object of, you know, or so therefore it is they. As well as they plays, as well as they play. That you can get into some difficulty with that, though, sometimes, too. I mean, people are real sticklers for it, but I completely agree with you. I don't think we need to go further in that.
Yeah.
I think you can use it in that way. Some people say technically you could maybe argue the as forms a sort of prepositional phrase, so therefore them could be seen as correct. Sticklers tend to say it should be they. I don't think we have to worry about it.
Other than this, it gets me, because then you got, like, Fletcher is as good as him. or Fletcher is as good as he.
Yeah, Fletcher is as good
as he.
See,
in that sense, it gets confusing because as good as him is as good as he is. I mean,
I say he. I'm actually old fashioned. I do the he. I do the horribly annoying formal thing that I hate, but I do it.
I do too. I say the same thing, but I don't think we need to worry about that. The fact that we do it is fossilized English at this point, I think.
Yeah, you know, when I answer the phone, if somebody asks for Fletcher, I do say this is he.
Mm-hmm. Because you're speaking formally. And I think going back to what you had said earlier, maybe in writing, I think we should probably stick mostly with the he rather than the him. In spoken, I don't think it makes any difference.
Eesh. I'm not even sure I would do the he in writing. I don't know. It just makes me feel weird. Another thing that makes me feel weird is where to put apostrophes after.
That's right. After. You got my thing. We're talking Sophocles. We're being Greek here. So our question for you is, how do you refer to his play, Oedipus at Colonus? Is it Sophocles apostrophe S, Oedipus, or is it Sophocles apostrophe no extra S, Oedipus?
Right. So just to simplify this a little, let's just say Sophocles' play, right? So Is Sophocles' S apostrophe S, Sophocles apostrophe S, or is it just Sophocles with an apostrophe there? Me, I am going to do the apostrophe S. I think AP style may ask for just S apostrophe with no extra S at the end.
Well, that's really weird because you really hit on something here. First of all, I have my last name has two S's in it. So and for some reason, seeing three
first
S's
name.
In a row really bothers me.
Your
I hate
first
Ross's
name?
Books.
Ross, your
yeah.
first name.
Ross is your
first name.
Yeah. let me correct you on your own name.
No, I don't like the last name that way. Yeah.
We talked about this the other day because you wrote an email and I corrected you. I did apostrophe S. And Ross said, no, I prefer not having the apostrophe S.
And in fact, in most cases, they say you should add the apostrophe S. But English style matters and manuals, including the New York Times Manual of Style, says with classical names like Socrates, Ramses, Sophocles, etc., you don't add the apostrophe S. You just add the apostrophe.
What?
That's it's bizarre.
And then biblical too. You do the Jesus, Moses. You only do everybody else apostrophe S. Moses gets only an apostrophe.
But newsflash. Meanwhile, the Chicago Manual of Style now says that you can add the apostrophe S to Moses's and Jesus's. So basically, I think you just pick what you think is right. And
I mean,
just leave it at that.
Is anybody doing anything other than just picking what they want to? I know people have strong opinions on this. I wouldn't say my opinion is super strong, but I have one. I mean, I like the S apostrophe S, but like, is there a reason for doing one over the other than just how it looks?
There really, we can't find a rhyme or reason. It's just basically, it's a genitive. I mean, it's a genitive, you know, it's a possessive case, genitive. And in Old English, you had a certain ending and now they have the apostrophe. It, you know, that's the way it is.
Yeah.
Well, I don't get me started. You know, the thing I was just thinking, I'm sorry, as you're saying this, I'm looking at all these apostrophes. The thing that drives me crazy, though, is when people put apostrophes in for the plural. Do you see all the time?
Oh, it's the word.
It would be apostrophes, A-P-O-S-T-R-O-P-H-E, apostrophe S.
It's the word.
You know?
They put quote marks around it.
I think I'm getting tense now.
what's even harder there for me to handle, and that's already bad, that's already about as bad as it gets for me as far as misuse of punctuation. But what's even worse is when somebody does that to somebody's name, like your last name, Petras. Somebody would write P-E-T-R-A apostrophe S, like Ross.
Don't talk about that. We've had that. We've known someone for 15 years now, and she still goes, how are the Petras, with apostrophe S. I feel like screaming. Well, let's see if you get the next one right.
Okay. Whom did Fletcher choose? Or who did Fletcher choose? That's an easy one now.
Is
it? So I will tell you what I would do 100% of the time. I would say, who did Fletcher choose? It's probably whom, because I think Fletcher chose him.
Right. You're right. You didn't say Fletcher chose he. Yeah, you're right.
I usually have to reverse it like that to know the answer. But I would not say that. I would not say whom did Fletcher choose. I would not write whom did Fletcher choose. That's just not something I would do.
Nor would I. Would you, Ross?
I hate to say I would.
You would? Okay, now on a list. I've never heard you say it, though.
Oh, say it or speak. I thought you meant write it. I'd write whom. Oh, I would say who.
Okay. I was saying, so I would not, I would probably write whom as well.
I would write whom. I would never, I would say who.
Yep. I wouldn't even write it. I wouldn't even write it. Not at this point.
Oh.
No, that I would. Okay. Fletcher has a fever. I suggest that.
Fletcher has a fever. I suggest that he see a doctor or he sees a doctor. Fletcher has a fever. I suggest that he see a doctor. Fletcher has a fever. I suggest that he sees a doctor. This is the subjunctive, isn't it?
Yes!
Yay!
Yay!
Good Fletcher.
All it took was two or three episodes and a couple of years on the subjunctive, and I got one right there.
Okay, what do we do with the subjunctive with the verb?
We just put the verb there. We don't have the S on the end, so it's he see a
doctor.
Right,
it's a stripped regular verb. Perfect. Good show.
Okay, this one's a tough one, I thought.
We both had some problems with this one.
Yeah. So this is hard for a couple of reasons. The sentence is, one third of the orchestra is on stage right now. Now, I could also say one third of the orchestra are on stage. So is it really one third of the orchestra is on stage right now or one third of the orchestra are on stage right now? And that is hard. Mm-hmm. We've talked about the verb agreement and how it's sometimes different in the U.S. versus in, say, the U.K.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that comes into play here since we're also talking about one third. I would probably say one third of the orchestra is on stage right now because one third is. But R doesn't sound weird to me either. One third of the orchestra are on stage right now.
I agree with you. The answer here that the various grammarians were sedating is that humans, you're talking about a third of a orchestra is countable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're humans in that orchestra. So therefore, those humans are more than one person. So humans are countable.
Right.
So they're saying is would be, you're saying one third is, because that's a lump. So like one third of the hunk of cheese is on the stage right now. One third of the orchestra are a lot of people who have all little minds and souls and are all happy, and they are on stage.
They might not be happy, Ross. They might be very unhappy.
Well, they're happy because they're about to give a wonderful performance.
They might be bad.
Don't be depressive.
Well, I see who's the optimist in this family.
I must say, I know technically, you know, it's R, and I understand the reason, as you said, all these happy brains and people with their happy hands and someone's the first violin and all that. But I still like, I kind of, to my ear, I prefer is.
I agree with you.
I really do. I'm not happy with R. I'm just not.
No, I got this wrong when I read it. I had one third of the orchestras on stage right now, automatically.
Because then now we go back to, remember we talked about British English versus American
yes.
English, and the Brits with the thing with the teams, like it would be like Manchester United.
Manchester are on the pitch now.
Are on the pitch. Whereas you say the Yankees. Oh, you said the Yankees are playing. Hold it.
The Yankees is plural, though.
Yeah, we've brought this up before. So what about like the Heat, the Miami Heat?
I would say the Heat is.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, too. I'm just trying to think.
I'll make this a little easier. When you say Manchester United, you're not talking about like their mascot. So Manchester United are. So in that case, you would say something like, New York are leading the standings. We wouldn't say that.
No, we wouldn't.
No, that's better. Thank you.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, the next one is along the same lines. Her family write to her or writes to her to tell her about their lives every month. I mean, this is strange because it almost feels like it's going to be counter to what we just talked about with orchestra. I mean, I feel like it has to be her family writes to her to tell her about their lives every month. I would never say her family write to her, but they are countable, right? I mean, theoretically, mm-hmm. they're individuals with minds and souls and emotions. So along in that sense, you would think it would be her family write to her, but it can't be right. It has to be rights.
No, it's right.
Her family write to her?
Right is right.
No, never. I would not do that. I would always say her family writes to her.
Again, so would I. I would
so
write
would I.
Her family writes to her as well.
Yeah.
The logic, though, is that the family, they're about their lives every month. So we have a number of people, many of whom happen to be in the orchestra, writing about their happy lives every month. So it's countable.
Yeah.
So therefore it's plural. So it's they write.
Yeah.
I think it's dumb. Yeah. I think it's stupid and I hate it.
Yeah, I don't care.
My family writes to me.
But again, that goes to the problem in some cases with English. Like we all instinctively think writes. And I think if we look at it really technically and like nitpicky, we can see where it would be right. So what sounds right in a different way, R-I-G-H-T, is not right. But I think we should go with it.
Okay, this next one. God, I just saw this in the wild the other day. It just drove me nuts. Okay, I don't even want to say it out loud. Anyway, my wife and I's seafood dinner.
I hate this one. I just hate this one.
All right, so you're asking if this is correct. What I remember you telling me is that if you look at it a little bit sideways, it actually could technically be correct.
Oh, no, doesn't that kill you?
I know. It kills. This is called a Saxon genitive in some races, where the entire phrase is a syntactic constituent together. So we're saying like, so the whole, my family and I is like a unit. Mm-hmm. And then we're putting, tacking on the possessive. So it's technically correct. And I don't think I would ever use this. And I imagine all you guys are the same way.
Yeah, no, it's, oh, that's horrid. Ugh. So, I mean, I know it, you have to tie yourself in a few knots to get to my wife's and my seafood dinner, but my wife and I's seafood dinner.
I hate it.
I just want to cry.
It makes my skin crawl.
And I would never use this because I think people would look at me really weirdly if I said it. So
I got the heebie-jeebies.
Okay, we're doing correct or incorrect.
I think Fletcher will get this one.
If he doesn't, I'm actually going to be upset, and I think we should reconsider working with him, Ross. I mean, just don't tell him I said so. Yeah.
We'll keep it secret, Jeff.
Yeah.
Thanks. Okay, correct or incorrect?
Okay. So we've got a set of sentences here. I think we're going to do each one individually.
Right.
So the first one is, I just want to lie down after that long run. Yes, lie down. I lie down. Yes, that one's
right.
Correct. Next, can you lie the book down on the table, please? No, I can lay the book down on the table because lie is something I do to myself and lay is something that I do to something else.
Very good.
Next, go lay on the couch and watch TV. I think that should be lie.
Right.
Because it's something, again, that I'm going to do to myself, even though you're telling me to do it to myself.
Very good. You have mastered lie and lay, Fletcher. You have maintained our group, our happy little trio.
Thank goodness.
And at this point, I think we're ready for a vacation. Why don't the three of us go to?
He hasn't.
Ooh, this is a place I would like to go, mostly so that I could eat a lot of food.
Mm-hmm.
This is a place in Mexico, spelled O-A-X-A-C-A, and it's... I do know how this is pronounced. It's Oaxaca.
Yes.
Very good. You can take us with you. Yay.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torin Anderson composed our theme music and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can find all of their books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.